saving up to be pretty odd. Little deaths in musical beds, so it seems, of someone I never met. You will only hear these elegant crimes fall on your ears from criminal times. They spill on foul from a pretty mouth. When everybody gets there, everybody gets there, and everybody gets their way.
This is Panic at the Discworld, a bandom featuring Panic at the Disco Discworld fusion fic, written by Imperfect Circle and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated G, with the relationship, not really pairing, of Ryan Ross, Spencer Smith, Brendan Urie, John Walker, with additional tags for fusion fic and foursome. This story is set sometime between soul music and the truth, with no major spoilers.
Things have changed for me, and that's okay. I feel the same. I'm on my way, and I say things have changed for me, and that's okay.
Brendan came from a tiny farm in the Ramtop Mountains, half a cow and two acorns short of being a hovel, and had assumed the city of Ankh-Morpork would be similar in size and variety to the kingdom of Lonker. It might even be smaller, he had supposed, because Lonker, that huddled collection of villages, mountains, and goats, was a kingdom, whereas Ankh-Morpork was merely a city. This was much like using height to deduce that a baby made less mess than a hat stand, and tended to have the same effect on one's shoes. Lonker was too close to home, family, and obligation, so Brendan had come to Ankh-Morpork to seek his fortune. That this was unlikely to be found in the bottom of one of the limping elk's cheerfully grimy pint glasses was not, at present, deterring him. "Hey," slurred a voice in his ear. He shifted a little on the barstool, wishing he hadn't curiously mislaid his simple, folksy, reassuringly sharp paring knife in someone else's hand, and kept his eyes fixed firmly on the things swimming in his pint. "It had to be good for you," the logic so often ran, "with so much living in it."
"You look a little..."
"No," he said wearily. "I'm not elvish, I..." He stopped. To his left, his words were being echoed in a sharper tone. He looked up along the bar to see the drunk slumped between him and two men, who forcibly reminded him of the other reason he'd left home. His mother regarded her sons as devices for producing daughters-in-law, followed, in the natural order of things, by grandchildren. Brendan was rather a disappointment in that area, and the combined weight of this and a week in Ankh-Morpork had dulled his typically outgoing nature so much, his grin barely split his face as he leaned forward to introduce himself. "Hi," he said. "I'm Brendan, and I'm not elvish either. I'm from the Ramtops, and we make sure of things like that back there." He smiled encouragingly. "And you are?" The men looked at each other. Under the current patrician of Ankh-Morpork, Lord Vetinari, the city's guilds had thrived. Why spend money on extra watchmen when you can get the Guild of Thieves to hunt down unlicensed cutpurses and leave you a receipt afterwards? Indeed, why bother regulating trades, crafts, and arts of the night when the guilds will do it for you, and regard themselves as shrewd bargainers when you only tax them 10% for the privilege? Each guild had its own set of hand signals, facial twitches, and other tools of covert communication to aid in the time-honored business of identifying us and fleecing them. Brendan had not yet been in the city long enough to know that the language of the silent conversation passing in front of him was none of these. Spencer, said the one who hadn't spoken before.
It's good to meet you, not elvish Brendan.
Ryan, said the other.
Brendan felt for his purse. He was already short on next week's rent, but what is life without the hope that tomorrow will be the day everything falls into place? Indeed, he was only one day out.
Can I buy you guys a drink?
He said, smiling wider still.
Spencer frowned, digging his hands into his pockets.
We don't drink,
he said, stepping forward from his stool to stand beside Ryan.
So why are you in a bar?
We play,
said Ryan, mouth twitching in a quick private smile.
Music.
Brendan had not been in the city long enough to pick up much slang either, but he took to the words he had met with the ease and enthusiasm of a noble-born nanny in the better class of three-volume novel. He felt his feet jiggling with excitement as he leaned closer, ignoring the unconscious drunk between him and his new best friends.
Cool.
Two miles away, an easygoing student with a disarming smile turned down one of the city's many dark alleys.
Good evening, a voice said behind him, dry and dusty as a crypt. Tell me, what do you know about vampires?
When Brendan left the farm, his sister had sent him off with love, tears, and 20 thick woolen jumpers to keep out the Ankh-Morpork cold. He'd sold 6 to pay his first week's rent, telling himself that soon he'd have enough odd jobs and casual work to pay Mrs. Smalleye his bed and board. If things ever got bad enough to sell his favorite jumper, the one the color of his sister's cheeks in winter, he'd sell it. But they wouldn't, he had promised himself with the same blind optimism that now made him run up to Spencer and Ryan as they finished their set and say, "You need me."
"Hi, Spencer," said Spencer,
vowel stretching in a poor imitation of Brendan's voice.
"You guys were great."
Brendan looked at them in confusion. "Yes, of course, but you need me."
Ryan's mouth twitched.
"I can do heavy lifting,"
said Brendan, reaching for part of the drum kit Spencer had just finished dismantling.
"And I can play things."
At the farm, they'd had 2 old guitars, remnants from an uncle's abandoned youth, and sometimes Brendan had been allowed to play the organ at weddings, as long as he didn't mention the words size or girth, and especially as long as he kept that stupid grin off his face. Spencer and Ryan exchanged another non-guild look.
"You mean you need us," said Ryan.
The music had been... Brendan wasn't good at words. Not the sort of words he needed to talk about, the feeling you get when people you've never met before strike the chords that you never knew were playing in the back of your brain, beat the rhythm you've been marching to since you first slipped out of time with the rest of the world, and all the while don't even notice or care what they're doing to you.
"I can lift things," he said again, "and play things, and sing."
He tried another smile.
"Back home, they let me handle a really big organ."
Ryan looked away at that, pretending to adjust his hair. It would have been more convincing if Brendan couldn't see it immediately flop back into place.
"And can you pay guild rates?"
asked Spencer.
"We can't afford to get in trouble with them again."
With a sinking feeling, Brendan weighed up how much he had in his purse against the calculating, wearily tolerant looks on Ryan and Spencer's faces.
"We mainly play guild music,"
said Ryan in a warning tone.
Brendan guessed those would be the songs that hadn't reached into his soul and shaken it.
We don't...
Spencer cut himself off. He looked at Brendan's face, searching for some sort of reaction.
Some people still remember music with rocks in,
he said. They looked at him again, not so much hopeful as marginally less resigned. Brendan sighed. He didn't need his jumpers anyway. Winter would be over soon enough. Spencer knew he shouldn't remember music with rocks in. He'd woken up one day, shaking his head to dislodge the last memories of a dream of leather and sweat and music that grabbed you by the throat and said, "Now!" when he saw Ryan's face appear in front of him. Ryan had stayed with him a lot back then, before they'd left the Shades 5 streets and a lifetime behind. Now they still shared a tiny room with whitewashed walls and one floorboard, but at least it was theirs. For $1 a week, no pets, guests, or undead. And at least it was away.
Tell me,
Ryan had said, gripping Spencer's wrists tightly.
Tell me you remember.
He'd stared at Spencer and bit his lip in the sort of fear Spencer had hoped never to see on his face again.
The music.
Spencer had held his gaze, listening to the last notes of the dream die away, and thought, now. Now, 2 weeks since Brendan first set foot in the city, three men walked down the moonlit Turnagain Lane, laughing together with the wit and immortality of youth.
Stop, said a voice from the shadows.
At the sound, Spencer felt every muscle in his body seize up at once. He couldn't move, he couldn't think, he could only feel the mind-numbing terror of things that lurk in the night. He wanted to close his eyes and pull a blanket over his head. He wanted garlic and holy water and a really big crossbow. He wanted his mummy. He said. If he didn't move, if none of them moved, the voice might... There was a dry, dusty rustle, followed by the sound of a cloak being twirled theatrically. The light... the voice said. You look so beautiful in the moonlight. A second voice answered. Nice. Still frozen in place, Spencer started to breathe again. That was not a voice that boded.
The complex interplay of the shadows with their useful countenances, said the first voice.
Now that was a voice that boded.
The cheekbones.
Said Brendan. Spencer winced internally. Nice kid. Shame about his life expectancy.
Oh, what am I thinking? Said the first voice. There are my manners.
Spencer felt his muscles free up instantly. He turned his head to see a short, pale man with very sharp teeth and an iconograph hanging around his neck. Ryan was shaking almost imperceptibly, and Brendan was hugging himself. In the background, a scruffy-looking man in a long black cloak leaned against a wall, smiling apologetically. His teeth were normal.
I am Otto, said the vampire. And this is my assistant, Igor.
Igor, of the normal teeth, coughed pointedly.
John, said the vampire. This is my assistant, John. We must always be moving with the times, John tells me.
Said Brendan again. The poor kid must never have seen a vampire before, thought Spencer. ignoring the fact that he hadn't either. While the zombies and golems fit right into the guiding Ankh-Morpork principle of we can get them for you wholesale, the few vampires and werewolves who made it to the city tended to keep themselves to themselves. It was no secret that Commander Vimes was not fond of anything that wouldn't stay dead. The Otto took his iconograph in both hands.
If you would please return to laughing, he said, I wish to capture this artless revelry.
John pushed himself off the wall to whisper into Otto's ear.
Ah, said Otto, you must not be worrying, he said, pointing to a patch of darkness hidden in the folds of his cloaks. I am a black ribbonor. I do not drink the B-word. I do not think of the B-word. Your B-word is safe in your hot, throbbing veins.
He nodded proudly, causing another dry, dusty rustle.
When I met John, I was about to fall off the wagon, but he showed me the light.
Smiling almost bashfully, John stepped back to lean against the wall again.
Light is pretty awesome, he said.
Now, please, said Otto, if you would be so good as to frolic in the moonlight.
Spencer blinked and very carefully didn't raise one hand to his neck. He gritted his teeth, steeling himself to step between Otto and the others, when Brendan gave a sudden laugh and spun once on the spot.
Shall we?
Brendan said, holding a hand out to Ryan, and then, without waiting for an answer, took him in his arms and began to dance. His eyes were fixed on Ryan's, and they moved together with an ease that made Spencer feel a stab of something. Relief, he decided. With a dip and a twirl and a smile that was old teeth, Brendan waltzed them both around Spencer, then deposited Ryan into Spencer's arms.
It's just like Mad Uncle Silo, he said under his breath, as he leaned in to kiss Spencer's cheek. Only without the crossbow.
Spencer and Ryan spun off together, and Spencer felt a laugh bubble up inside him. They danced on, following the music in their heads. Ryan led for a few bars, then Spencer, his teeth ungritting as his neck remained unpunctured. Out of the corner of his eye, Spencer could see Brendan rush towards John.
Care to dance?
He said, gnawing on his bottom lip. John reached forward, brushing his finger along Brendan's mouth almost tenderly. Spencer could feel Ryan shiver.
Don't, said John. You might break the skin.
And then they were off, all four of them, dancing and whirling around the alley to music only they could hear.
Good! Cried Otto. Good!
I like him, said Brendan, sitting with his back against the wall of their shared room.
He'd inveigled himself into their lodgings with the same cheerful entitlement as he'd wedged himself firmly into the rest of their lives, his feet propped up on Ryan's knees, and his small mess of belongings taking up a whole corner of the room.
Spencer was not surprised.
Brendan liked everyone, and John was very easy to like.
Of course you do,
Ryan said, strumming at his guitar absentmindedly.
Do you think this?
He played a chord.
Or this?
He played another. Spencer found his hands beating time against the bedpost. He was perched on the edge of the bed, and if he stretched his arms out fully, could have touched opposite walls.
Not John, idiot,
said Brendan. He couldn't have noticed Ryan's flinch. His own smile didn't falter.
Otto, he's... Oh, the first chord. He's nice. Reminds me of home.
I thought you ran away from home,
said Ryan.
really the first one?
That time, Brendan's smile did lose a little brightness.
The first one, definitely. He reached out for the guitar. And then this.
He played three notes, clear into the tiny room.
Spencer closed his eyes. That had rocks in.
The mind, people said, was a funny thing. The members of the Butchers and Surgeons Guild tended to agree, though they added that a couple of pounds of gray, squishy matter would never be as funny as a trick Sideways Pete could do with a ribcage and an artichoke. The Wizards of the Unseen University went one further still, and claimed that the mind was a hilarious illusion that could be blotted out by sufficiently much port. This contentious theory, they maintained, required rigorous testing. The mind of a vampire was a particularly funny thing, although a string of garlic and a long head start, preferably a continent, were recommended before actually laughing at one. Vampires had a lot of focus. Normally, they spent this on blood. Hot, flowing blood, fresh from the veins of beautiful, young, yet curiously inexperienced women and men. But coming to Ankh-Morpork meant adapting. And for vampires, it had meant learning to clutch her black ribbon and have a nice cup of cocoa before the city opened holy water factories and started selling pointy steaks on a stick on every street corner. Otto von Krieg had tried to adapt. He tried to obsess over bricks for a while. There were so many of them, he reasoned, and they came in hundreds of different shapes and sizes. If he got confused, he wouldn't hurt anyone. This line of thought lasted until the first time he chipped a tooth. Then he tried gardening. He would grow well-regimented flowers and complex patterns of creeping vines. There would even be tender, succulent, juicy fruit, for the times a nice cup of cocoa wouldn't cut it. But there was too much sunlight and dirt, and not enough skulking in dark corners with a menacing swish of your cloak. In fairness, though, he had tried. He'd been on his way home from a disappointing meeting of the Midnight Gardeners. Despite the name, they seemed more interested in the activities of a small pit of very excited dogs. When he'd found himself behind John Walker, a student at the Unseen University, with a fondness for iconography. John liked the imps that lived inside iconographs, painting what they saw when the shutter was lifted. They were bred to be as unimaginative as possible. John told people this made a refreshing change from wizards. And the light, he would add, his easygoing smile transformed for a moment into something much sharper. I like the way they see light. The rest, as they say, is history. Creepy was another word Brendan had never needed in the Ramtops. Creepy was fanciful, the witches said, and there was never any time for fancy, not when there was a harvest to be brought in and sheep to be sheared. So Brendan wouldn't have called John creepy, especially not in comparison to Uncle Silo. But there was something odd about the way he kept turning up to their gigs, leaning against a far wall with a thoughtful expression on his face, tapping his feet in time to the songs they hadn't bought from the guild. He'd been there the night of their first major brawl, when someone in the Limping Fly had decided that they looked a little too elvish for this part of town, and thrown an iron horseshoe straight at Brendan's head. It had been awesome! John had picked a man up by his nose! He'd been there the night the faded pony's cat had had kittens,
when they'd had to stop playing halfway through a song to let Mr. Flinch search under the floorboards for her. It was not unusual for them to play over the sound of five burly men and two trolls having a fist fight, but when the argument over who would hold the kittens first was conclusively ended by a hissing mother cat, even Spencer had choked down a laugh. Judd normally disappeared by the time they got off stage. Or off platform. Or off slightly more grimy area of the room. So one night, Brendan left Spencer and Ryan arguing over the final chord and picked his way through the broken chairs and flying limbs of a gentle Octoday Night brawl. "Hey," he said, leaning forward to be sure John could hear him over the squelch of fists meeting soft, flabby parts. "Hey," said John, still looking at the stage. Brendan turned his face to the stage, his cheek brushing John's, and watched as the rest of his band, started to pack away. The argument had become what he now recognized as one of their non-guild conversations. Silent and barely perceptible twitches exchanged until Ryan looked away and laughed, his voice still golden over the noise of breaking bones. Spencer smiled then, throwing a drumstick up in the air and catching it with the flourish of a man with all his fingers. Brendan's heart beat time. Brendan stopped. There wasn't much call for these sorts of words back at the farm, and he couldn't bring himself to use the ones Ryan had written for them either. John smiled at him, eyes kind as they flicked between Brendan and the stage. "Yes, you all are." "I had a lecture once," said John. Above them, a glass hit the wall and stuck. We cornered the lecturer in recent runes by a blackboard and wouldn't let him leave until he'd given us knowledge. After that, the faculty stopped going near the student quarters without backup.
The unseen university did not so much teach its students as weed out any who couldn't survive the rigors of magical academia. The faculty was involved only in that anyone who made it through the spells, demons, books, and drinking of an undergraduate career was graciously allowed to sit in examination.
He told us about one of the Hwandaland languages. They believe all the words that will ever be said are fixed in the air, and we just move around them. If a mouth hits one, it makes a sound, but you can only ever get the words that are already stuck there. It leads to very repetitive dinner parties.
Over on the stage, the others had wrestled the drums into submission. Ryan was smiling at something, watching as Spencer started to carry their kid away.
"Brendan!" Spencer shouted. "Heavy lifting!"
When Brendan looked back, John had slipped away. He was left with the worrying feeling that he'd just had a non-guild conversation of his very own.
The night mist rolled through the city streets, tumbling with it the dregs of the fights, thefts, and music that passed through Ankh-Morpork nightlife.
"Don't you think they looked a bit elvish?"
said one dreg. He was not one of the city's finest minds.
"Just around the ears,"
said the other, a marginally faster thinker.
"No elves in the city. Commander Vimes would go spare."
"Elves have gold," said the first dreg, casually.
"Oh,"
said the other, who didn't think
quite fast enough. "Relieving them of that would be our civic duty."
If civic duty can be inferred from the actions of the majority of a place's citizens,
then he was absolutely correct.
A voice appeared behind them.
"I think, perhaps, you would do best
to reconsider that thought. Now, added a second voice. This time, it boded. The melting gusset hummed with the businesslike sounds of 50 humans, dwarves, and trolls aiming to get drunk as quickly and efficiently as possible. Normally, trolls and dwarves drinking within the same mile radius was a recipe for extreme violence and flying entrails. Or, in the troll's case, quartz. But the gusset maintained a peaceful atmosphere thanks to the no-nonsense approach his patrons took to anything trying to distract from the serious drinking. Music was tolerated only because it drowned out any possibility of conversation.
Come here, said Ryan, gesturing with a stick of coal. I'll do your eyes too.
He blinked out at Spencer from underneath a jagged layer of black spikes and swirls.
Said Spencer.
Ryan bounced forward gleefully.
Thank you,
he said, cupping Spencer's face with one hand as he began to trace out patterns with a finger.
You're going to look awesome.
By the bar, Brendan grinned at them.
Ryan had already got to him. He looked like a horror story the Fool's Guild told its youngest recruits.
Ryan was humming to himself. The music weaved itself into the noise of the crowd, picking up the stops and starts of the slammed glasses around them. Spencer began to beat time with his free hand, and he raised an eyebrow at Brendan to come across and harmonize, feeling like a man who'd just found a dollar behind the sofa cushions of life.
He was going to buy peanuts with it, Spencer thought to himself. Peanuts and a sausage in a bun, and peanuts.
He found it hard to want much more.
There,
said Ryan, standing back to admire his work.
Ooh, Brendan nodded sagely. Pretty. Ryan's mouth quirked into a smile. Yeah? Of course, said Spencer. It was on him, after all. Brendan laughed.
Hey, he said, waving at someone behind Spencer.
Do John, too. Number one fan, Ryan called out. Come and be beautiful.
His eyes were crinkled with laughter. Spencer approved. Suddenly, there was a presence behind him. Never having been exposed to any of Brendan's uncles, Spencer thought it was pretty creepy.
Hey, said John. Peanut?
He held the bag forward. There are moments in life fraught with possibility, where many different paths are open and ready for the walking. Moments where the humble woodcutter can take the road to the right, toward the princess in the woods, or to the left, towards the prince in distress. Moments where the world holds its breath, waiting to see which of the thousands upon thousands of different choices, each equally likely, will be taken. Moments where the universe doesn't know what will happen next. This was not one of them.
John, said Brendan. Can you come home with us tonight? He can play. He told me.
Spencer and Ryan shared a look.
Well, that was predictable.
But funny,
Ryan ventured.
John was awesome.
Not, Spencer thought, that they'd be able to fit them all in the room.
Sure, said Ryan. They just have to sit on each other's laps. Now, come here. I want to do your eyes. How do you feel about glitter?
John might have been more sociable than university, with a beard kept considerably shorter than tradition demanded. But he was, at heart,
A true wizard when it counted. Will it sparkle?
He asked.
Lots?
Ryan smiled. John was still not convinced the musicians weren't elves. He was a tolerant man, though, and as long as they weren't actually eating babies in front of him, he didn't mind. In fact, he made an effort not to carry iron when they were around. Being such a magic-resistant metal, its use was encouraged in university plumbing and crockery. There's nothing quite like going to take a shower, only to discover your hot water is now a toad and three marshmallows. But he rarely needed it elsewhere. If anything was going to convince him they weren't parasitic fairy invaders, though, it would be their room. Elves should live in magical palaces and beautiful, spacious woodland glens, not whitewashed rooms too small to swing a malnourished kitten. Melon, said Brendan, offering him some of the fruit hurled at them during yesterday's performance. It's still ripe. Thanks. John took a slice, Brendan's smile winning out over John's natural suspicion of eating plants. Centuries of wizarding tradition held that vegetables should be boiled into submission, and fruit was only healthy when drowned in sherry. Ryan, Brendan, and Spencer were piled on top of each other, legs tangled together in their effort to give John enough space to sit.
You can breathe out, he said. I don't mind the squash.
As they spread apart, the single candle spluttered, making the shadows on the wall leap in fright. The coal around the probably not elves' eyes had smudged during the performance, highlighting further the way their eyes shone so brightly and their cheekbones cut through the air. John felt his breath hitch.
Brendan said you play,
said Ryan, once they had settled again, legs still slotted together. John nodded. Before I came to Hawkmoorpark, he said. Back in Lomeros. They hadn't put their instruments away.
Not when John thought about it, that there was really space for and a way to put them.
And so Ryan gestured at the guitars, the knee against the wall.
You want to?
The candle spluttered again, and John frowned for a second.
He could do this one.
With a quick mutter of the traditional incantation,
you will observe nothing up my sleeves,
he waved his fingers to fill the room with soft, gray-green light.
Cool, breathed Brendan.
Spencer nodded in amusement, catching John's eye long enough to let a smile flicker across his face.
Even Ryan seemed impressed.
John reached for a guitar. If he could do that, he could do this.
Sadly, he was wrong.
After a tactful silence, Brendan leaned over to the pile of clothes filling a corner of the room. He reached around inside, then pulled out a large cloth bag.
Don't worry. I've been making... I have a kind of a lyre, if you want to try that.
The light dimmed briefly with John's surprise. He hadn't seen a lyre since he left Lomeros. They weren't popular in Hawkmoorpark for some reason, and since leaving home he'd not even thought about music until the elves, Snever, danced into his life and picked up the beat.
Really?
Spencer and Ryan looked no less surprised.
A lyre? Said Spencer. You didn't say.
He looked guilty, as if he should have noticed something like that in his living quarters.
Ryan gnawed his lip. You've been making it?
No, said Brendan, ducking his head.
I found... When I went to buy guild membership, they were throwing it out. I've been fixing it up when I can't sleep.
I've been quiet, he added defensively. Spencer smiled. A long, slow smile that took its time filling his face.
Can I see?
Brendan hesitated, then grinned back. I want John to play it first, he said. With remarkable self-control, John didn't perform a short victory dance.
There wasn't room.
He took it in his hands and felt the heft of the wood. It was a good, solid job. Nothing fancy, and he could see where new material had been added and damaged bits smoothed away. But it felt good in his grip. It felt right. He gave it an experimental strum and heard the muttered fragments of conversation.
I didn't know you whittled.
It's not whittling, dude. Die out. When he looked up a few minutes later, they were all gazing at him with the exact same smile. It had teeth. He found he minded that less and less these days. Talking of teeth, he said, ignoring their shared frown of confusion. I should go. Autolick's company after midnight. They stood as he did, and once he'd put the lyre down, Brendan pulled him in for a hug. I thought you'd like it, Brendan whispered into his ear. John tried to move his arms to return the hug, only to find them full of Spencer and Ryan. Idiot, said Brendan, soft enough not to wake Ryan. He hadn't slept well the previous night, and they didn't need to be anywhere until the evening. Moron, Spencer shot back, just as quiet. Fool. Dunce. Cheese breath. Gormless hick. Ryan poked his head out from underneath a pile of blankets and clothes.
Don't fight, he said in a monotone. I hate it when you fight.
Spencer's mouth tightened, and Brendan patted him on the knee, reaching over to ruffle Ryan's hair.
Tiny rooms had their advantages. Go back to sleep, he said. Troll features over here doesn't know when he's beat.
Just trying to keep Sheep Boy amused, Spencer added.
Now is that or sell him on the streets, and we can't afford to join another guild.
Ryan pulled his head back under.
I hate you all.
As his wheezing snores broke out again, Brendan put his head on Spencer's lap.
Bad drummer,
he said, nuzzling down.
How is it even his snoring is adorable? Tone deaf.
Elvish. Spencer laughed.
Good one.
There was a pause.
I asked Sally about you,
he continued, petting Brendan's hair absentmindedly. Then he stopped, and at Brendan's subtle whine of complaint, cuffed him lightly around the ear.
Sally's cousin is from Locker, Spencer continued. So, I'm not sure if I've got this right, but...
His hand settled back down on Brendan's shoulder.
Brendan felt his heart sink. Something had happened, and they were going to send him away.
Brendan was not always very perceptive.
You can court Ryan.
Spencer said it all in one breath.
You have my permission.
Having never attended any of the current lecturer in recent runes forced lectures, Brendan did not know the word hizkv, which existed in a variant on a dwarfish dialect used in certain transmogrification spells. Literally, it meant the discovery of tholeitic basalt in an anthracitic coal mine, but could be more usefully translated as the feeling you get when you're halfway through a waltz, only to discover that the band is playing a tango and your partner is trying to knit a squirrel. It would have been very useful at that moment. But instead, the word that floated into Brendan's mind was...
Oh,
So that was it. That feeling of lightness and laughter when he saw Ryan. The way his heart threatened to burst through his chest whenever Ryan smiled at him. That only, Brendan felt that when he looked at Spencer, too. And when he was near John. Home, and safe, and happy, and free.
Brendan may not always have been very perceptive, but he knew a good thing when it grabbed him by the throat and drew diagrams.
I think, he said slowly, not moving his head.
I think I have a better idea.
The end.
Things have changed for me, but that's okay. Change.